Parshat Tezria starts off the following. Shmuel, you're a geek. Here we go.
Did you get time to record?
Yeah, I did. I got it on there. Motzi Laz. It's not Laz. It's true. Hey, Dabra Shem Moshe Lamor. Dabra Ben Israel Lamor. It's not a problem with the Lashon Hara. Dabra Ben Israel Lamor. Isha Kisaz Riv Yod Zochav Tomas Shivas Yomim Kimini Das Devosot Titma. Very, very interesting start to any Parsha. Starts this way. God spoke to Moshe saying, speak to Ben Israel, saying the following. A woman, when she gives birth to a male. She should be Tomei for 7 days. The amount of days that she normally has the concept of Nida, which is that concept of Nida, bleeding, that's how long she becomes Tamei. So here we go. We spoke about kashrus of animals in last week's Parsha and Parsha Shmini, and I know, I got all my animal aggression out, right? We all got that aggression out. A lot of aggression about what I want with animals. Anyway, got the kashrus of animals. All of a sudden, we talk about a person being born. All of a sudden, a guy's being born. What's the connection from the animals to the person? So this is famous. Rashi starts off, just like Darwin, that's kids. But by the way, just like animals are born, and then afterward a person comes, so too over here, the Parsha speaks about animals and then it talks about people. Okay. Rabbeinu Ephraim says the following. Rabbeinu Ephraim says, the wife of Manoach, the mother of Shimshon, she had a problem giving birth. The Malach came to her and said to her, Al-tokli kol tuma. Don't eat anything tummy. I don't want you eating anything that is impure. I don't want you eating anything impure. Rather, I want you to be holy. I want you to be holy with this baby. And the baby is going to be a very, very holy baby. Now, what did she mean? What did the Malach mean by al-tokhli kol tumah, that you shouldn't eat anything tameh? What was the problem, or what was she being warned about? So apparently there's a big skula. The skula is the following. There's a little bit more. This is it. There's a skula. The skula is, if you eat the stomach of a rabbit, it is a skula to have babies. Not going to suggest it to anybody, especially because it's completely not kosher.
Right.
In the last week's parsha, we specifically mentioned the rabbit not being kosher, even though it does chew its cud in some way, shape, or form, but it doesn't have split hooves, so therefore it's not kosher. Eating the stomach of such a rabbit gives you some type of, I don't know, something goes inside your body that is able to let you give birth to a baby boy. Give birth to a baby boy. I don't know, maybe try it, see how it works. But apparently, just like refuah, I would have thought that it would be motivation of Manoach to take it. The wife of Manoach should have been able to take it. Why? Because it was refuah. It was healing herself. She wasn't able to give birth to a child. Now she was able to give birth to a child. All of a sudden she was able to give birth because she ate from a rabbit. Hey, you're right. It could be ase dochalos. I say you're doing one thing. Comes the Malach and says to her, al tochli kol tuma. Don't eat anything tuma. I know what you want to do. Don't do it. Don't go have the rabbit. Don't go eat that rabbit, because I know what's going to end up happening if you do it. You're going to be over a lot. I want this kid to be born. I want it to be a kadosh kid, a holy kid. Therefore, al tochli kol tuma. Don't eat anything. Tell me, don't allow yourself to eat that. Now, the Tal Lioros brings out another medrash. You got to hear this medrash. I heard this medrash for the first time this year. It says the following. If you're zoche, then people are known as the number one thing in the world. We're the most powerful thing in the world. If you're not zoche, if we're not zoche, if we don't do the right thing, then there are two things that were born before you. A gnat, a yitosh, and a worm. A little worm, a slug, was born before you. So if you think to yourself, well, I'm so great, I'm such a great person out there, then God looks down at you and says, yeah, there was a gnat that was born before you. There was a slug that was born before you. Two really disgusting creatures, right? Everything was born. So why does the Torah have to mention those two things? Why do you have to mention the slug and the gnat over any other creatures out there? Oh my gosh, you got to hear this word. What is the point of us being here in this world? What is the point of us being here? You're about to eat something. We have something that's called a blessing that we make on all little bits and foods. The point behind that bracha is to separate the bad from the good. To take the good within us and bring it within us, and even inside our bodies. Inside our body separates the bad from the good. The bad, it excretes, it gets rid of by going to the bathroom. The good, it keeps inside our bodies and spreads through our entire body to make our bodies feel more healthy, to make our bodies all healthy. These two creatures have nothing to do with that. The gnat is known from the Gemara in Gittin that says that it has a ma'alona, it brings stuff in, it eats, but it doesn't have a mafkana, which means Yechidza doesn't have the ability to go to the bathroom. When Titus was being killed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a gnat went up his nose, went inside there and kept eating and eating and eating. It got bigger and bigger and bigger, but it couldn't excrete anything. So it just got bigger and bigger and bigger until it got huge, so that when they opened up his head after he died, they saw that it was a huge, big thing, a huge, massive, looked like a bird that was stuck inside his brain from that one gnat. A gnat never gets rid of all its evil. So to a slug, what is a slug all about? So I know this seems a little strange. I'm going to retranslate what the Talioros means. A slug, if you look behind it, always has a trail of slime behind it. It's got a trail of slime behind it. That trail of slime is some type of bathroom that it goes. But what it does is, it sort of goes to the bathroom and then rolls around in its own filth. It doesn't really get rid of that stuff. It also takes it back within itself. It's able to pull it back in. It'd be like going to the bathroom, then rolling yourself around in it. Then rolling yourself around in it. That is disgusting. If you're still eating challah, you're still good. It looks that way also. But either way, you're perfectly fine. You're rolling around in it, and then after that, all that happens. The Pshat behind both those things that they don't understand. They have no clue what it means to get rid of the bad and to keep the good for yourself. The gnat doesn't do it at all. It doesn't get rid of the bad. It keeps the bad with the good. It never gets rid of it at all. The slug gets rid of the bad, but then rolls itself around in it. Keeps itself within the bad. Keeps itself within there. So these two things show you that there are other creatures in the world that don't get rid of the good from the bad. Your tachlis, your purpose in this world, is to get rid of that bad and to just take in the good. If you don't do that, if you're not zoche, which is the word of mezakech, if you don't make the good out of the bad, then there's already a gnat and a worm that's before you that's doing that job. So what are you here for? What are you bothering here for in this world? That's the idea about it. That message is in this week's Parsha. I thought that was a very, very nice thing to say. Okay, that was that. But those are the two things that are out there. Now, Bris Milah is done on the eighth day. I think we all know that. Bris Milah is done on the eighth day. The question is, why the eighth day? Why the eighth day over any other day? Why not the fifth? Why not the sixth? Why not the tenth? Why does it have to be on the eighth day over anything else? So everyone knows the famous, there's all the Maharals and all. They all say eight. You know, seven is nature. Eight is above nature, lamala minatava, they call it, a little bit above nature, because like the 7 days of the week, we all know, and there's no eighth day, and everybody holds it the 7 days of the week. Everybody knows there's 7 days of the week. Eight is already beyond nature. It's a little bit beyond. So therefore, on the kid, when he gets his bris milah, he's on a level that's like beyond anything else. So it's the eighth day already. It's something that's more kadosh, more holy. Okay, that's one thing that everybody says. But let's go into the answers over here. Number two, this Sforno. Listen to this Sforno. Sforno says the following. He says, the child, when he's born, he's all red. Now, for those people who've had kids, we're good. We're good. For those people who've had kids, those kids are fully red and bleeding and disgusting. They look like little prunes when they come out. You take them out, and like all of a sudden, the kid is just like, you're just like, oh.
I wouldn't say red.
It's interesting. Red is because we sort of got rid. The blood is mostly taken out by the doctors and like moved around and everything. Blue, weird colors, right? Weird colors. The blood of Nida, the blood of the menstrual cycle, hits within that baby, goes within that baby, and the baby is formed from that blood, and that blood goes around in all these different things in all these different areas. For some reason, it's all in there. Eventually, the blood throws itself out of the baby. The baby either goes to the bathroom or gets rid of the blood in some way, shape, or form. By doing something, it gets rid of all that blood. But it takes 7 days for it to do it, says this morning. On the eighth day, it's fully cleansed of its blood, and at that point, when it's fully cleansed of its blood, that's when you can give it a bris milah. Up until that point, it's in tuma. It's in like this impure state that you can't do anything with. All of a sudden, it becomes a pure state. It becomes a much better state. It goes up there to a new state. That's the idea that the Sforno says. The Or HaChaim says the famous word, Shabbos. It needed to hit Shabbos. You got to come to Shabbos. 8 days automatically includes Shabbos, because the seventh day is always going to be a Shabbos, some way, shape, or form. No matter when it's born, if it's born on a Sunday or up until whatever, it's always going to hit a Shabbos. So for that to work, you're always going to be able to have this idea of, okay, it's hit Shabbos. On Shabbos, every person gets an extra bit of an neshama. We all know about that. That neshama gives you more strength to go through the week. I just said, I'm exhausted. I haven't had a week like this in a very long time when I'm absolutely, totally exhausted. on Shabbos, for some reason, there's like a little bit of strength that comes in you. That when you rest on Shabbos, it's like a double rest. Every hour that you sleep is like a double hour of sleep. And we all know, we get the bagels. So when you get those 12 hours of sleep on Shabbos, it counts like you slept for a full day. The learning goes the same way as well, by the way. Any learning you do on Shabbos counts as double. So any blot that you do, some even say that counts as seven times. So every blot you do counts as seven. So if you do, let's say, 10 blot of Gemara on Shabbos, you just did 70 blot of Gemara on Shabbos. And it goes even further. There's a lot of different things regarding what you do on Shabbos itself. But regardless, so what happens is we allow the baby to get the bris milah only on the eighth day because we need it to hit Shabbos. We need it to get that extra bit of neshama, that extra bit of strength. Once it gets that strength inside him, then we'll be able to give him a bris milah. So why not always give the bris milah on a Sunday? That'll work out really well, by the way. Because like caterers will always be okay with it. The moles will always know what they're going to do, right? And plus, everybody will be happy. It'll be a Sunday morning bris, you know, and then nobody has to go to work. Everybody will be happy. Yeah, get a good breakfast every Sunday morning. It's like a good feeling. It's a great feeling. Yeah, you know, okay, you're missing out on a little bit. You're missing out on bahab. You know, you don't take off the Monday, Thursday tachanun. But aside from that, it'd be a great idea to be able to have a bris every Sunday morning. The reason why is because we wanted to make a low plug. We wanted to make it a day-wise that we can also add in that Kiddusha idea of the eight being beyond Kiddusha. However, we got a Gra on a Chassam Sofer. You got to hear this Gra on Chassam Sofer. This Gra says the following. The Gra says, the Gemara says, the reason why it's got to be on the eighth day is because back then, men and women were not allowed to be together with one another for the first 7 days after a boy was born. For 7 days. And really, that's the Chumash. The Chumash said, V'toma Shivas Yomim. She's tummy for 7 days. For 7 days, that woman has to stay away from her husband. She's like she's in Nida. She's not Nida. It's not the menstrual cycle. But she's in a stage that's like Nida. She's not allowed to be together with her husband during those 7 days. She's Tameh. She's impure during those 7 days. And that's it. She can't go anywhere near him. On the eighth day, she's allowed to be back with her husband. Now, she may still be bleeding. But the Torah says during the next 33 days, even her bleeding, even that blood, is tahor blood. It's considered pure blood. And you're allowed to be together with your wife. Now, we hold Midrash Rabbanan nowadays, that's not so. You're not allowed to be together with your wife until she stops bleeding completely. But back then, you waited 7 days, and that's it. After the 7 days, you were immediately allowed to be together with your wife, and it was mutter. There was no problems. So we didn't want everybody at the bris to be happy, and the husband and the wife to be sad. So we waited until the husband and wife would also be happy, because they were going to be able to be together again. What day was that? The eighth day. So we wait till the eighth day so that the husband and the wife can be together. Says the Gra. But wait a second. Nowadays, that doesn't apply. So nowadays, you shouldn't have a bris milah until the husband and the wife can be together. Like the 30th day, the 40th day, however many days it takes until after she gave birth, until she stops bleeding, the husband and wife can be together. And that's when they'll have the bris milah. It'll be awkward, because somebody will go up to you, when's the bris? You'll be like, I don't know yet. I'll tell you. And it's really awkward that way. But the fact is, that would be, according to this reasoning, that's what it should be. Says the Gra. What? The halacha changed. We paskin that it goes differently now. But says the Gra, you see from this that halacha does not follow reasons. If the reason behind the mitzvah goes away, the whole mitzvah still stays. You see it from this case right over here. Even though the reason went away, because men and women can't get together on the eighth night, still we see that it's mutter for them. The bris milah still happens on the eighth day, even though it's also for them to be together. We see that if reasons for mitzvahs change, it doesn't matter. You know, like if you have water, mayim gluyim, you're supposed to cover up the water at night.
Yes.
You know why you're supposed to cover up the water at night?
Snakes and stuff don't get into it.
So snakes don't chew up the water, spit it back out, and put their poison inside the water. You don't know what the odds of that happening that right now are?
1 in 20.
1 out of every 3 jars. Yes, exactly. That is,
in my bedroom, I hope not.
Never, never happens. I mean, we're talking literally, there's a 0% chance. Says the Gra, even though the reason behind this din, the reason behind the halacha went away, you still got a hold of the halacha. And you still got to cover up the water. Why? We don't know why. But it was a mitzvah, it was a commandment that was made by a Kadosh Baruch Hu, by Hashem, or by the Rabbanan. It doesn't go away, even if the reason goes away, which is is one of the reasons why Chol of Yisrael, there's arguments if you can ever matter that up. They say, Chol of Yisrael, you don't have to worry about pig milk anymore. The FDA, this, that, and everything. Rav Moshe matters it completely. But the Chassam Sofer says, the reason went away doesn't make a difference. The Din D'Rabbanan is still there. It's usher to drink anything but Chol of Yisrael. That's how the Chassam Sofer learns it. He says that the reason goes.
Like, why the reason goes away for the D'Rabbanan, why would there still be a D'Rabbanan?
That's what we're learning out from Bris Mila. This also has somewhat to do. You're right, but doing it in the 8 day is Mid Rabbanan. Technically, I guess you could say, yeah, you're right. A good call, but it is, says the Gra. That's what we learn out from this puzzle, that even if the reason goes away, that by the Rabbanan, it goes the exact same way. I'd have to check on Mayim Gluyim as well. I don't know what Mayim Gluyim really is, if it's considered a minig or a Din Rabbanan. Either way, that's number three, but listen to Chassam Sofer.
And you go to sleep, you can't drink it in the morning.
Cannot drink it in the morning if it was never covered in the night. Yeah, you're going to die of poison from a snake.
Wow.
So don't do that. All right, listen to this. The Chassam Sofer said that one time there was a doctor in an operating room. A woman came in, she was hemorrhaging blood. All this blood was coming out of her body, right? So the doctor sat there and he saw that she was bleeding, and everything he tried was not, he was trying to suture the, you know, the blood from not coming out, and tried to close up the wound and everything like that. He couldn't get it to stop. The blood just kept flowing. So finally, you know what the doctor said? Every nurse, get out of the room. Told every nurse, get out. All the nurses walked out of the room. He closed the door. Immediately, she stopped bleeding. So they went to the doctor and they said, what in the world just happened? What happened? He said, I've noticed in my practice that whenever Anita is in the room, a woman who is bleeding from that area of her body, it pulls blood out from other parts of people's body. So meaning, if she's bleeding at that time, the other people who are bleeding will not stop bleeding. So now listen to this. Says the Chassam Sofer, that's pshat as to why you have to have the bris mila on the 8th day. In the first 7 days after she gives birth, she's bleeding profusely, the mother. The mother's bleeding all over the place. If you give a bris mila during those first 7 days, that blood is going to be moshech, the blood from the child, and you'll never be able to stop the bleeding from the child when you give him a bris mila. It'll keep flowing and keep flowing and flowing and flowing, and it'll never be sutured. You're going to kill the baby. But if you wait till the 8th day, when the mother is supposed to stop bleeding, then the baby will be able to stop his bleeding on his own and everything's going to be okay. So that's why, because the Nida woman might be around her child, so we make sure that she's not around. Yeah.
If there's other people around, I mean, lots of people come to her.
By a bris mila. But who's as close to the baby as the mother herself? You do have to be close. The nurse, I guess, was really close to this person. So he said, all nurses, get out of the room. The nurses were still around, but they were out of the room. They were away from the person that was being operated on. So too, when it came to this, the people were still around. The woman is still around, but the real woman. I agree. I have agreed to that before. But we're not going to talk about that right now. Okay. You ever heard this concept of Ishma Zriya Tchila Yoledes Nekeva? There's machlokas of whoever, when a man and a woman are together, whichever one is Mazriya first, whichever one is the first one to have to be affected by the act, then the child will be the other way. If the man is affected first, the child will be a girl. If the woman is affected first, then the child will be a boy. So the Gemara asks, I mean, the Chassam Sofer asks it, but it's asked by everybody, really. I don't get it. By Jews, can't we daven? I mean, it says within the first 40 days, you're allowed to change a child from a boy to a girl, a girl to a boy. So I don't get it. If you can change it from a boy to a girl to a boy, through your tefillah, through your prayers, then why in the world do we have this idea of, well, if the man is first, then it's going to be a girl, and if a woman is first, then it's going to be a boy? That shouldn't make any sense. It should have to do with, simply put, whether or not you daven for it or if you didn't daven for it. And plus, I don't get it. There's a malach that comes out 40 days before the baby's born and asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is it going to be a boy or is it going to be a girl? It's before the act ever happens that the malach is asking, the malach is deciding whether it's going to be a boy or a girl. So what in the world is going on over here? Okay. Maybe, says the Chassam Sofer, it's naturally true. Naturally, by other people, depending on which one is first, that's what the child will be. The difference is that Jews don't go by nature. Jews are above nature. We know we're not affected by the mazals, by the constellations. We're not affected by that. Our tefillah can definitely change things. The proof is from Yosef. Yosef and Dina. That Rachel Imenu, we know, is pregnant with Dina. And Leah, or Rachel, davened and was able to switch the child from Dina to Yosef. That she ended up giving birth to Yosef instead of Dina. She ended up changing the girl inside her to being a boy inside her. And Leah, who had a boy inside her, ended up changing him into a girl. That girl was inside her. That's the pshapi and what we make as our brachas every morning. Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu melech haolam, shelo asani goy. That you didn't make me into other nations of the world. What we're blessing and what we're saying is, thank you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for building us above nature, for making us above nature, that we can decide what kind of child we have. And because we decide, the next bracha is what? Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu melech haolam, shelo asani isha. Shalos and Isha. I know there's Ovid in between. Don't worry about Ovid. Shalos and Isha. The Pshat and Shalos and Isha, that you didn't make me into a woman, is only because we're above nature. We can make the decision to make ourselves into a woman or a man. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can override the system, so to speak. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can override and say, instead of a boy, you're having a girl. Instead of a girl, you're having a boy. So because we're not the other nations of the world, we may be Zocha to be able to have a boy or a girl. Based on that, we can change something into a boy from that. Yeah.
How do you answer that?
What? Shosani Avid has nothing to do with it, according to Sam Sofer. Shosani Avid is something different. But there's more. Yeah. I mean, to be with the Jews. Yeah, Shosani Avid, don't worry about it. The Remez is another way, by the way. It has to do with Mazria Tchila, also has to do with where the Shefa comes from. If God, the way we look at it is, we're supposed to be married to God. Shira Shirim is all about God searching for the Jewish people. God is represented by a man, and the Jews are represented by a woman. And the God is chasing after us, trying to get us to stay married to Him, so to speak. We're running away from God. We're running toward the other Avodah Zarah, to idols and whatever it is. We're cheating on God, so to speak. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is trying to bring us back to Him. When everything comes from Him, and the man is the one that's causing the tshuva to happen, meaning HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one that causes us, that makes us do tshuva, meaning He does punishments in order to make us do tshuva, things are not good. Then a girl is born. Nikeva, as we said before, stands for being cursed. Bad things happen in this world. But if the person down here does it, and we start it off by ourselves, and we do tshuva without God prompting us, we do it on our own because we want to do tshuva, then everything's good in Shemayim, and we end up doing tremendous things, and a boy is born. That means all bracha. Zachar is the gematria of bracha. So that's what's supposed to happen. That's the idea behind it. But alright, now let's go into a lot of good stuff. Ready? The revulsion. Our first revulsion for tonight. I think it's going to be our only revulsion for tonight. So why is Parshas Milah here? Tazria is all about saras, about leprosy, or whatever this type of disease is. Why are we going into Bris Milah right before we go into leprosy? Why do we go into it over here? Why here over anywhere else? That's a nice question, right? Shouldn't it be in Parshas Lech Lecha, where Avraham Avinu was commanded to go give his kids Bris Milah? Wouldn't that be a logical place? Hey, here's a good place to put Bris Milah. By where the Bris Milah first happened, here's a perfect place to put Bris Milah. So why is it here? So check this out. It says, you know, if you speak about things that are tame, things are bad. Have you ever noticed that really from people will never say the word cancer? They'll only say, like they'll say, yenem machla, that sickness. Or they'll say, like, they'll use roundabout terms to call it, in order to call it. They'll never say the direct word. You know why? And especially not in Hebrew. In Hebrew, they the chla won't say the right word. They'll go completely around it. Yeah, they'll try to get around it. People, the firmer you are, for some reason, the more inclined you are to turn yourself around and not use those words. What's the reason why? So listen to this. Every time you say a word that's bad, for some reason it brings upon you something that's tame. It brings upon yourself something that's full of tuma. So the more tame words you say, the more tuma enters inside you. As opposed to if you do it the opposite way, the more tahor words you say, the more pure you are, the better better you are. So therefore you got a big problem. You have a whole parsha about saras. The more you talk about saras, the more tummy you become. The more disgusting and into filth and into darkness you become. So how can you have this whole parsha? What are you supposed to do when you have this whole parsha? So listen to this. In order to offset the tumah, to offset that penalty of having tumah within you, we start off with bris milah. What's bris milah? Bris milah is done on the eighth day. Eight, as we said before, has no shaykhis to death. Eight is lamala min hateva. It's above nature. It's a number that's above nature. Seven is a natural number. Eight is above nature. What it means by that is it's in a place where there is no death. Who comes to the bris milahs? Eliyahu HaNavi. Eliyahu HaNavi comes to every single bris milah who never died. The bris milah has no shaykhis with death. It has nothing to do with death. And just like death, there's also sicknesses. Sicknesses and all those types of things all have to do with death. It's a lighter form, but has to do with the tumah of death. All those things don't apply when it comes to bris milah. In the world of eight, in the world above nature, that world doesn't have any death whatsoever. That's the world of Eliyahu HaNavi, where there's no effect whatsoever. So what we do is we start off talking about a bris milah. We start off talking about something that's so tahor. We bring about Eliyahu HaNavi within ourselves. And when you talk about bris milah, you bring Eliyahu HaNavi into yourself. He enters your body and he says, I'm here. What do you want from me? He comes inside you. And that way, just like he comes to every bris, he comes to every person who wants his tahara. So then you can speak about saras. And because you have this bris inside you, you have this tahora inside you, it doesn't affect you. So anytime you want to talk about saras, anytime you want to talk about leprosy, you got to precede it. You got to preclude it with something about a bris milah. You got to start it off with something that has to do with tahara. Start off with kedusha. Start off with tahara and then go into the tumah. If you don't do that, then you're just going to have tumah. And that's bad. That's going to lead you into just tummy things, which is absolutely terrible. But is saras really death? Is saras really referring to death? Rabbi Schechter talked about this before. I think it was 3 years ago. But it's Rav Shurvor. Rav Shur says the following. We know that four people are considered like a dead person. Anybody remember them? Four people are considered like they're dead. Number one, an ani, a poor person, is considered like he's dead.
No children.
No children, very good. Somebody doesn't have any children. A blind person. No belongs to the ani. A blind person. Final one is a guy with saras. A guy with leprosy. Leprosy is white skin. What happens to a dead person when he dies? Well, hopefully the dead person dies. What happens to him at that point? Skin turns white. All the pigment from his skin gets lost. And the guy slowly but surely turns white until it rots off his body completely. That's what happens. Saras is death itself. If you get saras, it's like you're dead. It's like you're dead. The Medrash says that Moshe Rabbeinu told Bnei Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Bnei Yisrael. Bnei Yisrael were all scared when they heard about saras. They heard about this leprosy. They got all scared. Moshe Rabbeinu went up to them and said, don't worry about it, guys. Don't worry about saras. Don't worry about leprosy. It'll be taken care of. It's not for you. It's for the goyim. It's for the other nations of the world. But it's not for you. Saras is not for you. It's for other nations and that's it. So listen to this. What did he mean by that? He meant the following. All sicknesses stem from the Satan's army. The Satan is an army full of shadim, full of mazikin. And as we said before, these shadim mazikin are probably bacteria. He's got an army full of bacteria that's out there to give sicknesses within the world. An army full of them. It's all of his shadim, all the demons in the world. They're all out there just for that reason. They're there to give sicknesses. But who's the guy in charge of death? Who's the guy that does death in the world? The Satan himself, who's the Malach HaMavis. The angel of death is the guy who's in charge of that. Saras is a form of death. It's equal to death. So who's the guy that gives you Saras? Thought the Jews, it's the Malach HaMavis. So the Jews got very scared. This is not just another demon. This is not just one of the Satan's army guys, one of the guys who's coming up to me and making me sick. Saras is given to me by the Malach HaMavis himself. Nobody can cure death. There's nothing you can do to death. And even though the Tanayim and Amorayim all have the ability to do Tchias HaMesim, to make the dead live again, how many times did that happen? You think that Tanayim and Amorayim were going down to the cemeteries, letting people live left and right? Everybody had the ability to do it. But not everybody did it, because they knew there was a reason for death in the world. So they knew that if there's a reason for death, and you shouldn't bring people back to life, so if a guy is Saras, must be he'll never get out of it. So they were saying to Moshe, you mean to say, that if I speak Lashon Hara, if I say something bad, I'm never going to get better again. Because the Satan's going to give me tzaras, and I'm never going to get better again. Said Moshe Rabbeinu, no. Tzaras by a Jew is different than tzaras by a goy. Tzaras by a goy, you're right. It's given by the Satan himself. That tzaras is given to the goy, and the goy will not get better. It's not the same tzaras that Jews have. It's something that's worse. It's something that will never, ever go away. Something that stays in the body, what we would call the sickness of leprosy nowadays, that eventually they atrophy, they start losing their limbs, and they die. There's nothing you can do about it. There's nothing you can do. There's no way to heal it. That's what the suffering gives, and there's no way to get out of it. It's like death itself. It's a slower form of death. But by Jews, what's it called? It's not just soras. What's it called?
Nega.
Nega. Nega literally means negia, to touch. It's the touch of God. Soras is like what happens when you have a burning hot coal that touches part of your body. Once again, your skin turns white. Skin turns white. It could turn red and pink and whatever, but the skin turns white. If you immediately get burned, there's a whiteness on your skin. It's like a Kadosh Baruch Hu is coming down and saying, you did something wrong. Touching you and turning that part of the skin white and saying, you did something wrong. There's something you did wrong. It's not given to us by the Satan. Tzaras is not given to us by the Satan, the Malach HaMavis. Tzaras is given to us by a Kadosh Baruch Hu himself. He comes down and he touches us. That's why Nega is eventually Oneg. It can switch around from Nega to Oneg to be something good. By Goyim it stays forever. By us, it's bad at first. It's a Nega, but it's for our own good. It's for us to realize we did something bad, and eventually it'll all be good. What's the difference between Nega and Oneg? Simply put, where is the ayin? Is the ayin on the right side of the word, or is the ayin on the left side of the word? Oneg and Nega. Listen how this works. You have two eyes. Your left eye is the eye of Tuma. You use your left eye and it shows you all the bad things that a person has. All the terrible things. You're always looking at the bad of the person. You're only seeing the bad in the person. The right eye always stands for good. You're always seeing the good in the person. You're always finding the good inside that person. You're seeing, oh, that's there. Now we have a little double entendre over here. Ayin is the letter ayin, and ayin is also the eye. So what we're saying is, if you use your left eye, you use the left ayin, the word becomes nega. It becomes a plague. It becomes something bad. If you look at things in a bad way and you start speaking Lashon Hara about people and everything, it becomes a nega. The way to turn that into oneg, the way to turn it into something good, something positive, is to use your right eye. Take the ayin and put it on the right, and then it becomes oneg. Then it becomes something to celebrate over, that we can be healed while the goyim will not. Chazal say that when a sickness is brought to the world, it can't be taken away. Somebody has to have it, and eventually it'll kill the person. When tzaras goes to a Jew, and a Jew davens, that sickness can leave the Jew and can be brought upon to his enemy in other nations. His enemy in other nations get that tzaras instead. If a Jew davens to get rid of his sickness, then all of a sudden that sickness can fly up and go to some other person who's trying to kill us. That's the idea. If it's a nega, it's a terrible thing, but can turn into an oneg. If you take rid, if you get rid of that sickness and let it fly away to somebody else, it can become an oneg. Because you celebrate double fold. Number two fold. Number one for yourself, that you got out of your sickness. Number two, the other person, your enemy, is the one that's dying now. Your enemy is the one that has it, and he has no way of getting rid of it. That's the idea behind what tzaras is saying. And that's the reason why in the beginning of the parsha of tzaras, in the beginning of the parsha, it says, Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Aharon Lamor, Adam, ki ha-ba'or b'sero seisus ha-pachas v'ba'heres. When an Adam has these things inside them. Adam. You guys remember the famous Gemara? Atem kruyin Adam, v'lo agayim kruyin Adam. Jews are called Adam, but not Goyim. Goyim are not considered Adam. Famous words, where Meir Milblin has a famous word when the blood libel came out in the beginning of the 20th century in Russia. Meir Milblin was called into court about this pasuk. We see that you consider Goyim less than human. Because the pasuk says, you're called an Adam. Goyim are not considered Adam. You see, you consider people, you know, Goyim less than human. So Meir Milblin said, no, it's not shot behind the pasuk. Jews, Atem, in plural, can be called Adam, a singular person. When one Jew is injured, when one Jew has a libel put against him in Russia, every Jew in the entire world feels his pain and davens for that Jew. Jews throughout the world, Meir Milblin said, daven for that Jew. That's what Jews are all about. We're into Achdus, and being together. Not always does it work. Sometimes sometimes there are risks in Klal Yisrael, and it's bad. But every Jew cares for another Jew. We're all one Adam. We're all one person. We're all put together as one. Eina akum kuyin adam. Goyim are not that way. Goyim do not have that camaraderie. There's no nation in the world in which they have the expectations of being together as one, of being together as one nation and saying, like, one person gets hurt, let's all daven for him. No other nation is like that. By the Jews, you have one person in the middle of Israel. You have a guy who's stuck in jail or this or that or whatever. You have every Jew saying talim for him. You have one goy that's stuck in jail, none of the other goyim care. Maybe his next door neighbor, maybe his family. And that's it. No one else cares. No one else cares. It's not the same, said Rav Meir Milblin. We're called a singular Adam. You guys are not called Adam. You're called Ishim. You're called plural people. That's the difference between us and you, says the Parsha. What do you get Saras for? For Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara is a social sin. It's a sin between one man and another man. By Goyim, there's no command about Lashon Hara. Is a Goy allowed to speak Lashon Hara about another Goy? Goy is. Why? Why? It's something bad, right? Because it's a social issue. By social issues, we don't have that expectation of Goyim. Goyim are not supposed to have these lives where they care about their fellow man. That's not what we expect of them, and that's not what their lives are all about. It is more selfish. It's more self-centered. That is what their life is. It's to get Hana. And it is more like that. So by them, there's no such concept of Lashon Hara. Therefore, they can't get the punishment of Tsaras. By us, it's a social sin. If one guy speaks Lashon Hara about another Jew, other Jews are affected. Every Jew is affected by one Jew talking about another Jew. Because of that, you got to be punished for it. There's got to be a pure punishment for it. That's the idea behind Tsaras, and that's the idea of what we're doing over here. That's why we start off with Adam and not anything else. Look at the table for a second. What looks like it's on top of what? Is the little dots on top of the white? Or is the white on top of the little dots?
The white's on top of the dots.
Is that what?
The white's on top of the dots.
White's on top of the dots. The white looks a little bit higher. Look in your chumash. Does it look like the black is on top of the white, or the black is deeper than the white? Which one's deeper?
The black is on top of the white all around it.
Look at the page right now. Look at the page the entire time. Look at the page. Does it look like the black's higher, or the black is lower? What does it look like?
Where you're going with this.
Black is higher, right?
Jewish letters are higher than regular letters.
There's a Rashi. There's a Rashi. Rashi says the Amok. Amok means any time there's a white spot on the skin. Now look at your skin. We're not so dark. Even the Mediterraneans are not as dark as, we're not black. We're dark, but we're not totally black. Whenever there's a white spot on the skin, it looks like it's deeper inside. It doesn't look like it's lifting up. It looks like it's deeper down. So when you have white on top of black, you'll see the white deeper down. Then Rashi has a problem. In Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Dalet, the Pasuk says, V'amok ein mareha mina or. It's not deeper from the skin, says Rashi. Lo yadati perusha. I don't get it, says Rashi. I don't get it. If it's white, it should automatically be deeper in the skin. So why in the world is this white? It's not deeper than the skin. It should be deeper from the skin. I just explained to you that white is deeper than the skin. So what in the world is going on over here? I don't know what to say. So Ramban says there's differences. It depends on what kind of a white it is. You ever seen stars in the sky? Stars look like they stick out from the sky. Look like they stick out. But the sun looks like it's deeper than the actual sky around it. You know why? There's a shine, not a sparkle, a shine to the sun. When the shine from the sun hurts your eyes, if you ever see that bright white thing, you see something so bright that your eyes hurt from seeing it, like a brand new thing, like when you're in the darkness and all of a sudden you look at a chumash that's pure white, you look at it, you're just like, oh, that hurts. You see something that's pure white? When the white is something that is so bright, it's so bright, so bright, it's like it's shiny, it repels itself from your eye, says the Ramban. You can't see it straight. It looks like it's full. It looks like it's pushing itself back because your eye can't see it. Your eye doesn't want to see it, so it like pushes itself away. It says, "Get out of here! Get out of here! I don't want to see this." That's what happens with the white of the eye, with the white thing that it sees when it's sparkling and shiny. But if it's just a plain white, it's a regular plain white. It's not shiny. Then you're going to see that actually as being higher. It will look closer to you because your eye will see something that's lighter quicker. quicker than it'll see something that's darker. Quicker than it'll see something darker. That's how the Ramban says. There's an easy pair. So what's going on here? So he says, I don't know what Rashi's problem is. Amo kemaramina or is because back then when we said that white is deeper, that's talking about a bright white. A bright white. When it's a white that's so bright, it's like the sun. That looks like it's deeper. But a white that's going on over here is not such a bright white. It's just a regular white. That's going to look higher. But what's Pshat in Rashi? Why does Rashi say that? So listen to this Pshat. The Maskil of David says, you know, the Maskil of David holds throughout the Torah. Whenever Rashi says the words, I don't know, that is the translation. That's the translation behind the Pasuk. So what does it mean over here? Says Pshat. Maskil of David says, in this case, the Pasuk said, V'amok in mareha mina or. Now I translated that as, it's not deeper than the skin. Really, if they wanted to say it's not deeper from the skin, you know what it should have said? The Eino Amok. It's not deeper. The Eino Amok Mina Or. It's not deeper than the skin. But the way it says, I know, it sounds cryptic. It says, the Amok in Mareha Mina Or. And deep, it is not appearing in the skin. That's a little weird. Why does it switch it around? So says the Maskil of David, it's referring to a certain halacha. What if the Kohen looks at it and is not sure if it's deeper or if it's not deeper? He can't tell. He looks at it and he can't tell. He looks at the guy and he says, let me see it. He looks at the white thing and he says, I can't tell if it got deeper. I don't know if it's deeper or if it's the same thing as before. So the amok, it's deep, but ain't mareha mina or. I can't see it within the skin. I can't figure out exactly what it is. It's a suffix. It's right in between. What's the halacha? The halacha is tameh. You got to say that he's got to be muskur. He's closed up for another week. So that we can see in another week, and we'll see what happens after another week. Maybe it'll get clearer after another week. You got to go ahead after a week. That's the pshat. When is it amok emareh mina or and still tameh? Says Rashi, lo yadati perusho. If the Kohen says the words, I don't know, perusho, that's the perush of the pasuk. Meaning, Rashi is not saying, I don't know what's going on over here, whether it's deeper or if it's not deeper. He's saying, if the pshat is behind the nega, that you can't tell if it's deeper, if it's not, and the wording, it's amok, but imaramina, or it's deep, but I can't tell exactly how deep it is. Says Rashi, lo yadati, says the Kohen. I don't know what to do over here. I'm not so sure what to do. Perusho, that's the perish of what you do, and then you make the guy tell me. That's how you understand this, Rashi. Now, I saw you shaking your head there. Yes, that is a harib shot to understand, but it is a geshmak shot. I do happen to like that. We're going to stop very quickly. I think we're going to say one other shot. What time we got? Oh, no, we're going to have to stop with that. All right, guys, we're going to stop with that. Just know we're going to go into a couple other things about Tzaraas next week. There's a famous Rav Shamshur for Hirsch. I'm not so into Rav Shamshur for Hirsch all the time because sometimes every other word is 17 syllables. And when I read Rav Hirsch and I see 17 syllables, I just don't get it. I just don't get it. But this time, says something that's so unbelievable about Tzaraas and so crazy true. Did you know that if a guy is entirely white, he's taller? If he has Tzaraas all over his entire body, he's pure. Well, that sort of throws off what Tzaraas is all about. I think if he was all white, that'd be the worst thing in the world. That guy's like, I don't know, albino man. You know, you'd expect this guy to be the most tummy guy ever. But no, he's the most tahor. Why is that? So we got to talk about that. We'll stop with this. Have a good Shabbos.